I am Planta on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Joseph Koechler is one of the more talented and exciting performers due shortly at the Push Festival. He lives in New York City, where he joined me from earlier in January, and will be in New Westminster at the Anvil Center the 26th of January at 8 p.m., and the following night, the 27th of January at 9 p.m., at the Fox Cabaret. He has a 3-plus octave range, and he deploys that remarkable talent with a show that features opera, torch, and pop singing, as well as monologues and performance that have garnered him many outstanding notices, awards, and commissions already. Visit josephkoechler.com for more and pushfestival.ca for tickets and information. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Joseph Koechler. Mr. Koechler, good morning.
Good morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon where you are, yeah, and I understand that I'm talking to you in the middle of I forget what they're calling it, the big blizzard there?
The nor'easter or something? Yeah. I don't know if it has a name or some proper name, but, you know, yeah, it's very snowy outside.
Yeah,
except for a sugar flower, so I mean.
Yeah. So as I was preparing for our chat, I was curious because, you know, you perform in so many disciplines, but I guess the voice is the most, you know, the prominent of your talents. Is there anything that you do, you know, to protect it, especially in something like cold weather, like you're experiencing today?
Well, I think singers famously wear scarves around their neck.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure. I'm sure that has some physical benefits, but I think it's almost it always looks more like a big metaphor to me. So I don't know. I'm not too. I mean, I don't smoke, and I try to get lots of sleep, and I try to drink lots of water. But you know, I drink alcohol and I drink coffee, and you know, it's kind of like that. Yeah.
Are there certain foods, certain drinks that you avoid though?
I don't avoid any foods in general, but they do something to my throat that is bad. So, you know, acidic foods tend to not be good before you sing.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol is drying. So you know, and it's not necessarily you need to eat enough that you have energy, but
mm-hmm.
you don't want to eat right before you perform.
Right.
Usually. Because it's, you know, then you might be burping up food
right.
instead of singing.
Now, from what I've seen of your work online, it seems like it's physically demanding. Is it emotionally demanding at all? Like at the end of a show, how do you feel?
Well, it depends. It depends on the energy of the whole performance. Often when I'm performing, I have also gone through a long day of teching and kind of doing stuff that a director or that a producer would do. So there's a different level of exhaustion there too. But it's also exhilarating. So sometimes I come off the stage in a kind of a, you know, mania.
Mm-hmm.
But recently in Houston, I was performing and I did just have to lie down on the floor for a few minutes and take a moment.
Yeah.
And then I was ready to face the world again.
Yeah, does performing, does it excite? I mean, you know, you hear these cliches from other performers that it excites them, that they can't wait to get on stage. So some, you know, it terrifies them. I mean, where are you just before the proverbial curtain goes up?
Okay. Yeah. Well, where am I psychologically, or?
Yeah, psychologically and physically. I'm assuming that there's a connection between the two. I mean, is there for you?
There is. Sometimes I don't like this. I mean, sometimes, you know, I'm dealing with last-minute problems, you know, tech problems or something right before, and I really dislike that because I can't get into the mode. But I like to stretch before a performance and breathe in certain ways, and I like to kind of go into a sort of almost a religious or some sort of, it's a kind of a spiritual feeling. I don't know, I found a book in the gutter in here in Brooklyn that is full of tips for instrumentalists and, and other types of, and actors, and it has this technique of thinking about someone you love and thinking that someday they will be dead and breathing in while thinking of this. And it does create this kind of energy, you know, a kind of urgency. So I try to do that.
It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it, in terms of just psyching oneself up to performing. But it also makes me wonder, though, how the book ended up in the gutter.
I don't know. I still have it, but, I just sort of opened it in a roulette-like manner and found that phrase. And it's really been interesting. So I think, you know, sometimes you're scared or nervous, but you have to connect to the, is it just the urgency of the present?
Yeah.
Going to perform live.
Yeah. And now, you know, I've read about you in preparing for our chat today, and I've seen your voice described. I guess the best way for people listening to this who aren't familiar with you or your work is to ask you, I mean, how would you describe your voice? I mean, that thing where it's 3+ octaves, is that right?
Yeah, and you know, the octave thing, it depends kind of, there are different conventions within the popular singing world and the classical singing world, so you almost have to count octaves different. You know, so Ema Sumac, who famously had I don't know how many octaves, that's they're using the popular definition. I think in classical terms, where you can sing almost in your full voice and then your mixed voice, how many octaves do I have? There's 1, 2. You know, I don't know what it is. Not quite 3, but in terms of like notes I can hit in one way or another, then it's larger.
Yeah.
But I'm, in terms of, in classical terms, I'm a lyric bass baritone.
Mm.
But then I use my voice in a lot of different ways. Sometimes I croon, and sometimes I use this, I don't know, I don't think it's quite a falsetto, if it's some sort of, if the production's more like a whistle tone, even though it's not terribly high, but I use different techniques and place my voice in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of a vocal shapeshifter to some degree.
Now you're talking to a layman who doesn't, you know, I mean, I listen to music, but I couldn't explain music to you. But as someone who is a professional, I mean, this fascinates me. Is this something? I mean, obviously, this is something that you have to work at, that you cultivate as you continue in your career. But is there something that you're essentially born with, that you have to work with, say?
Well, I think people have different people have all different voices and different bodies. So there are certain features that will make you a better singer or a better type of singer.
Mm.
Having a big nose often helps this kind of resonance. Having a big space in your skull helps with resonance. So there are physiological aspects, and then people have different kinds of aptitude too. So I think there are sometimes people who are very, very good technically with singing, but maybe they don't have an instrument that's that feeling, mm-hmm. but and then vice versa. Some people have incredible instruments and don't use them well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I do the best that I, well, usually the best I can with what I've got.
And so I guess your genetics. I mean, does that play a role? I mean, are there people in your family that have the same sort of range, the same sort of talent as you do?
Well, my mother has a very beautiful voice. She never trained. She never studied singing or anything, but she just has a really alluring, beautiful kind of folk voice, and I think a natural ability to sing. And my aunt was also a actress and a singer. She was very trained and a great technician,
mm-hmm.
and was involved in theater. So there are people in my family, and I come from an artistic family. People who write and paint, and no one is, you know, well known or has a big career or anything. But everybody was really dedicated to
yeah.
their different crafts.
One of your other gifts is this ability to be a great storyteller. And I understand there's a book that you've just published. But on stage, you're from what I've read and from what I've seen, a marvelous raconteur and storyteller. As a performer, does that come easy to you?
Yes, I think it. Well, I think there's an impulse there to tell stories, and I think I'm, although I'm a performer who's watched by other people. As a profession in my life, I am not a big presence in daily life. I'm more geared towards observation. So I think that's what makes me a natural storyteller is just that I'm fascinated by people and certain situations and just, you know, little absurd things that happen and kind of different environments and social interactions and kind of the ridiculousness of a lot in daily life. So that's something that there was always a certain writing voice there for me, and that's kind of the foundation of my stories and little humorous arias that I do, and the songwriting. So that's the other part of it.
Yeah, from what I gather from reading up on you, and this is something that I think a lot of people admire of you, is that you're not only interesting, but you're interested.
Well, that's maybe there's a connect, maybe to be interesting, one should be interested.
Yeah, too many people are wrapped up in themselves. So I mean, you must you must know performers like that, I'm sure.
yeah. I think with performance there is a certain type of bold narcissism that serves performers in part. But
yeah.
I think. Fascinating performers are usually have some sense of mystique to them, or they're usually very often you find that certain great performers are people who are very interested. You know, I mean to be good at anything, I think you have to be interested in it. I mean, you know, David Bowie is a great performer. He's such a fan of things, you know. He was just a voracious reader and listener. He's, you know, just so erudite, you know, and savvy.
Uh-huh.
I can't think of any performers I admire who aren't aren't sort of students in one way or another of art or of life.
Yeah, and that goes for people that are much older or have had long careers, that they continue to have that curiosity and that interest, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, you look at Bowie. I mean, right up to the end, how innovative he was, and how interested he was in different disciplines and the sort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was never really. I don't think he was ever coasting. He was never running on automatic. He wasn't, you know, just. He never entered some kind of zombie kind of self-parody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing about
go ahead.
Pardon me. The other thing about you is that you've got a lot of charisma, and I'm curious to know how you cultivate such captivating charisma that you seem to exude on stage as you do.
Well, you know, I try it. As my friend, the punk musician and humorist Jennifer Blowdryer says, charisma seems to come in waves. You know, people are charismatic for a while, and you know, you go through stretches. You don't have your charisma. You don't have your mojo. It comes back. I am not sure what would be called charisma, and how I cultivate that. Insofar as that is happening, I think that. I don't know. I think my style of performance, I'm not really totally like an actor who has a fourth wall. I mean, an actor's of course can have incredible presence and charisma too, but I'm more geared towards being there. You know, I'm not afraid to look at the audience, to acknowledge what's going on. If there's something going wrong, you know, you can incorporate it, you can acknowledge it. So there's something I think about being present, mm-hmm. and letting your guard down in one way that might help create energy. I don't know. That's a hard question. I don't know. I think of people who I find charismatic. What is it? It's almost, is it an unnameable quality, or is it something that can be defined?
Yeah, I guess it's a sort of charm that you have, because I mean, I see you on stage and I can hear or watch the audience watching you, and just how drawn in they are by you and your presence, your talents, obviously. And then I read interviews that you've done and reviews of your performance, and they say, you know, you laugh, and then you make the other people laugh who are in the same room.
Yeah.
I mean, are you aware of that? You have this sort of, I don't know, magnetism's the right word? I guess I'm groping for the right word as to how to, what people have said about you.
I don't know how someone cultivates that. I think there. I want to, you know, I want to communicate with the audience. I want to speak to them, and I want to invite them in. Mm-hmm. So there's something inviting that I try to cultivate in my performance. I don't know, and I think, well, I'm sure there are people who just aren't charismatic. I've also, and everybody has good nights and bad. I'm sure I've had nights and. Past, I'm sure the audience would say that I was not charismatic,
mm-hmm.
but I think that I've also put myself through so many different situations on stage that most bad things have happened, you know, that could happen, and so I'm not really afraid, ultimately, of something that could happen, and I think that is liberating.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that allows my presence and some sense of you know, by personality and, you know, authenticity, something to be there. I think it's kind of just also because I've performed so many times,
yeah.
You know, and allowed things to go wrong.
So. Yeah. You told one interviewer that as a society, ours isn't set up for people to be artists. What do you think needs to change for it to be more conducive for artists, or at the very least more encouraging for artistry, say?
Well, I think that that's a big question, but I do think that there's a disconnect right now in particularly American culture. There's this very kind of corporate entertainment, and very, you know, it sounds a little lazy, cliche to say, but sort of manufactured pop figures who are omnipresent in people's lives. And there are a lot of other artists working who aren't visible to the public. And I think that's a sign of a culture in decline, or a culture that's in a state of spiritual crisis somehow. So I think that particularly now in this political era, I think it's important for people to be in places physically. You know, I think not just consuming through the computer and television. I think it's important for people to go and hear each other in real time and space.
Right.
You know, a lot of the artists who I love, and I it's not that I have what you would call mainstream taste, but there are a lot of artists who I love, and they're kind of kept hidden. They're not household names, but often I think they should be there. I'm aware that there's a much larger audience for some of the people who give me so much life and who I admire and learn so much from, and I want them to have bigger audiences. And so I think we have to create mechanisms for that.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
No,
does that kind of answer the question?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you're going to be performing at a festival that I think whose mandate I think has always reflected that. And not only, you know, from our neck of the woods here, you know, local talents obviously, but from around the world, including people like yourself, who are coming from New York City to do their work here for the audience here.
Yeah.
I mean, and Push has done, you know, I don't know how familiar are you with them, but I mean, it seems to me when I talk to artists coming into town, year after year, it just seems to grow and grow, because I think there is a bit of an appreciation for a variety of different kinds of performing here. But then again, you know, it just may be unique to Vancouver, I'm sure. Well, you've been different places, haven't you? And I mean, you've been able to see different audiences watch you. Do you see a great difference in the kind of audiences? Say, just in your country, in the United States, from New York as opposed to other cities that you go to?
Well, I, you know, in a certain way, I mean, I don't know, New York, I've been partly created by New York, and I still have really profound experiences performing here. Sometimes I go other places, and certain audiences are just so appreciative. I think they kind of feel kind of like hungry for things, just because there's not as much, you know, New York New York has tons happening all the time. So sometimes
right.
in other cities, there's people will say, "Well, I've never seen anything like that."
Mm.
You know, it's so I have I have really satisfying experience.
Yeah, and it makes your point that the people are hungry for this stuff if given the opportunity to see it, right?
Yes, and I think that's the other point is that, you know, in the kind of state that we're in, there's always, the writer Sarah Shulman says that in a way we mistake what's familiar for, you know, the familiar for being good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's way too much, you know, in anything that involves big money, I mean, in pop music, in television, there's always a kind of caution there. And there's always a prediction of, okay, well, people will like this and base it on market research. Anyway, I think the trend is to always kind of talk down to the audience.
Mm.
You know, I think there's always an aspect of infantilizing the audience. And audiences are always, I find, ready for more than you think they would be.
Right.
And I think that's how artists have to operate, and I think that's how the culture should operate.
Absolutely, yeah. Have you been to Vancouver before?
I've never been to Vancouver. No, I haven't.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure the audiences at Push will be awfully receptive to your work because, I mean, as I said in learning about you in preparing for our chat today, just a remarkable talent there that I think that ought to be seen, and I think it'll be a very welcome part of Push Festival that you're here.
Well, I'm really excited to be there.
Yeah.
And to be part of it.
Yeah. You have a number of projects in the works. You've got commissions and the sort. So it must be a very busy time, is it, for you?
Well, it is busy time. I have a bunch of different things that are happening, so it's also just keeping track of everything. I have the book of essays and vignettes that came out about a month or so ago. And so I'm kind of touring around that and also touring with these kind of concert-type presentations like the ones I'll be doing in Vancouver and New Westminster.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm preparing, for a couple, like, more performance pieces that'll come out next year and recording stuff and making videos and possibly working on a TV thing, and doing a lot, and that's good. That's how I like to have periods where I'm not dealing with as much, but it's now is a good time to do a lot.
Yeah, and so when you look at the career, I mean, do you look ahead 5-10 years down the line, and do you have a sense of where you want to be?
Well, I've never been, you know, I'm trying to cultivate that kind of thinking in myself. I've usually just so chased impulses, and I've had certain persistent impulses and created my work. And okay, well, maybe I'll, and sometimes the work is the same, but it moves through different contexts.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm starting to try to plan ahead more. But again, it's, I think where I get stuck is I want the culture to exist in a certain way that it doesn't. So I have to kind of try to create the world I want to live in.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But I mean, from what I know of you, I mean, you've been able to do that, and that's just something to admire.
Well, thank you. I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm very stubborn, you know, and I'm a hard worker. So.
Yeah, I think there's a lesson in there for all of us, isn't there? To just keep at it and you know, be stubborn, because I think that's the only way to make it sometimes, right?
I think so. I mean, you know, I have moments, and I've had moments where I just, gosh, what am I doing? This is, you know, especially before I had opportunity, you know, the same kind of opportunities I do now, I would think, well, this is just insanity. What am I doing? But at the same time, I tried to look at the choices. Well, what are the choices? I mean, the choices to me are always that I have to do things my way and keep doing it, or just stop and somehow, you know, I don't know what, face the abyss, and that just seems unfathomable to me. So that's my life force, is just to keep doing my work the way that I think it should be done.
Yeah.
So there's not really a choice.
Right. Yeah. Well, but long may it continue, and every good wish. I so appreciate your time today. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to talk to you, too.
JosephKechler.com is the website, and, of course, pushfestival.ca for tickets. Joseph Kechler joined me on the line from New York City and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plantin.